Cresta in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Broadcasting from the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, Michigan, Al Cresta is ready for conversations of consequence. This is Cresta in the Afternoon.
Good afternoon and welcome to Cresta in the Afternoon. This hour, we will be addressing perhaps one of the worst massacres in recent history. We're talking about the Tiananmen Square massacre in China under the reign of Mao Zedong. And The actual death count is difficult to determine, but the BBC reports, I was unable to determine the source, but the BBC reports that about 10,000 people were massacred during this event. One of the core things that we'll be talking about with our guest, Stephen Mosier, and his book, The Devil in Communist China, is that communism has, is, and will always be incompatible with the Judeo-Christian revelation and therefore the Catholic faith. In fact, it is painful to even imagine that anyone would think that Marxist communism is compatible with Catholicism in any way. It's astonishing to even imagine. Not just because that the Catholic Church herself has magisterially stood against the ideology of communism and its push, but also because there's been intense opposition on the part of communism and communist regimes against Judeo-Christianity as a whole, not just by the founders, but also those who try to enact communist systems. The founders of communism exhibited a truly vitriolic opposition to the entirety of Judeo-Christianity and also to Jews as a whole and to persons of color. In fact, a lot of these latter views that I just mentioned, this opposition to persons of color, has to do with the fact that communism embraces an atheistic, materialistic worldview that is committed to the principles of Darwinian evolution to the extreme. So the fact of the matter is, communism begins where atheism begins. In fact, those are the words of Karl Marx, actually. Karl Marx described man as incapable of being edified or uplifted, as is the Judeo-Christian teaching. In fact, Judeo-Christianity teaches that because of God's grace, man can be elevated into becoming partakers of the divine nature. Instead, Marx argues that religion forces man into a struggle and that man is incapable of being edified. Now, we talk about this more with Stephen Mosier. For now, let's take a look at the headlines.
Thanks, Marcus, and good afternoon, everybody. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Wednesday, June 5th. It's the Feast of St. Boniface, and today's news is brought to you by the Ave Maria Family of Funds at AveMariaFunds.com. Approximately 20 theologians are in Rome for 10 days of prep work preceding the drafting of the guiding document for the next assembly of the Synod on Synodality. The closed-door meeting expects to release a text that will prepare the way for the drafting of the document that will guide the work of the second session of the Synod on Synodality this fall. Synod Secretary Father Giacomo Costa said this week's discussions are based on the synthesis report released after the first Synod session in October of 2023. Pope Francis says the risk for new global conflict increases as the memories of World War II fade. He issued a statement Wednesday marking the 80th anniversary of D-Day. Francis said the brutal memories of the past had given the generations that came after the desire to avoid new conflict, and added he hopes the 80th anniversary of the important turning point of World War II helps people find the desire for peace again. Police are investigating the vandalism of a couple of statues at Mater Dolorosa Catholic Church in Uptown New Orleans on Friday night. Security footage shows a man climbing into the Sacred Heart statue and breaking off the hands of Jesus. Father Herbert Kiff says the same man knocked over a statue of St. Padre Pio in the church's garden. Father Kiff says both statues will be restored. Police have not identified the suspect, and no arrests have been made. Older Americans are increasingly concerned about the future of Medicare. A West Health Gallup 2024 survey on aging in America says that nearly 3 in 4 Americans between 50 and 64 are extremely worried or worried about Medicare not being available when they become eligible for it. And there were no surprises in Tuesday's primaries across five states. Voters in Iowa, Montana, New Jersey, New Mexico, and South Dakota chose Joe Biden and Donald Trump in their respective primaries. With your AveMariaRadio.net news, this is Bryant Shanley.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to Cresta in the Afternoon. I'm Marcus Peter. 35 years ago today, the world witnessed the beginning of what came to be known as the Tiananmen Square Massacre. Now, weirdly or ironically enough, Tiananmen, literally means the gate of heavenly peace, or the gate that is given heavenly peace, if we translate it as accurately as possible. And yet, it was here that a pro-democracy gathering and assembly was set up to stand against the regime of Mao Zedong, and it was responded to with this immense massacre. The actual death toll to this very day is still indeterminable. We have some estimates, and like I mentioned in the opening, the BBC reports that about 10,000 people were massacred in Tiananmen Square 35 years ago. And this event isn't the only thing that we're talking about in this hour. Instead, we're talking about, in general, the reality of communism and the devil in communist China. And my guest is Stephen Mosher. Stephen Mosher was the first American social scientist to visit mainland China. He was invited there by the Chinese government, and he had access to government documents, and he witnessed women being forced to have abortions under the new one-child policy. At that point, Mosher was a pro-choice atheist at the time, but witnessing these traumatic abortions led him to reconsider his convictions, and today he is a practicing pro-life Roman Catholic. He's appeared numerous times before Congress as an expert in world population, China, and human rights abuses. He is a prolific author, and he's worked tirelessly since 1979 to fight coercive population control programs, and he's helped hundreds of thousands of women and families worldwide over the years. He lives in Virginia with his bride Vera and their nine children. Stephen, it's great to have you in the program.
Well, it's good to be with you today, Marcus, on this important topic especially.
I mean, this important topic and this rather dark day. Today we celebrate, 35 years since Tiananmen Square, but tomorrow we're celebrating, I think it's the 80th anniversary of D-Day. So it's a dark week historically, and we have quite a lot to talk about. So I'd like to begin with the Tiananmen Square massacre and some of the context that led up to it and what we can learn from it.
Well, what happened in the 1980s was that China, after the devastation of the Mao years — Mao died in 1976, but before that, for decades, he had launched anti-rightist campaigns. He had tortured, killed many people he called capitalists. He had taken the land away from what he called the landlords and rich peasants, killing many in the process. All the former members of the Nationalist Party and army were persecuted. Many were tortured. And, of course, there was the massive famine after the Great Leap Forward. 45 million people died from 1960 to 1962. Let me repeat that. 45 million people died in the worst famine in human history, not caused by crop failure or overpopulation, caused by Mao Zedong himself forcing everyone into huge people's communes. And then there was the Cultural Revolution. So China had been devastated by the Mao years. And when Deng Xiaoping came to power in the late 1970s, he said, look, we've got to retreat from this full-blown communism that Mao practiced, and we need to turn to the West for help. And we in the West helped him. We gave them technology. We sent trillions of dollars in investment money over. We opened our stores, the big box stores, to Chinese-made goods. So we lifted China out of poverty beginning in the late 1970s and early 80s, and many, many Chinese, disheartened and dismayed, disillusioned by the excesses of communism and the tens of millions of deaths, turned to the United States as a model of what democracy should be, of how human rights should be respected. And so the 80s was the high water mark of that. And in 1989, millions of people were demonstrating in the capital city and in other cities like Chengdu in the interior, Guangzhou in the south, Shanghai on the east coast. They were demonstrating for what? They were demonstrating for freedom, respect for human rights. They called for an end to bureaucracy and corruption. which sort of defines the Chinese Communist Party, by the way, bureaucracy and corruption. And they were quoting, they were holding up signs quoting Washington and Jefferson and Abraham Lincoln. Mm-hmm. And the Chinese Communist Party leader said, oh, we can't have that. And so they brought in that the local Beijing garrison, Marcus, refused to fire on the demonstrators because the demonstrators were their friends and family. Mm-hmm. And so Deng Xiaoping, the leaders of the Chinese Communist Party, had to bring in an army from Inner Mongolia, Outer Mongolia,
right,
to the capital, because they were mostly minorities, Mongols, and they had no close ties to the people in Beijing. And of course, the result was a massacre. 10,000, 20,000 people were killed. And a couple days after that event, what happened was army trucks pulled up in front of every clinic and hospital in Beijing. And all the wounded, and there were probably more wounded than killed, actually, on the first day of the massacre, all the wounded were taken away to an undisclosed location and have never been heard from again. That's called killing the witnesses.
Mm-hmm.
And today in China, you cannot talk about the June 6th massacre. In fact, the numeral for June in the Chinese calendar is 6, right? It's the 6th month. So 64, June 4th, in other words, 6-4, is a forbidden phrase. You can't buy anything on the internet for 64 renminbi.
Wow.
They'll charge you 63 or 65. It's like the 13th story in high-rise apartment buildings, mm-hmm, that don't exist because of superstition. Well, the yep. Chinese Communist Party has said you cannot use 6-4. We are not going to allow you to remember in any way, memorialize it anyway, the massacre that we carried out on innocent Chinese right. students and demonstrators who only wanted freedom.
So, and even as you're talking, one of those, it was a award-winning picture. They call him Tank Man because they never quite figured out who he was. It's this image of a man in a white shirt and black dress pants, and he's standing before this line of tanks, just almost defying them to go forward. And he's clearly one of the protesters. The environment was tense. The air was... It was very clear that the government was going to crack down hard, but I don't think anyone expected just how hard.
No, and actually there was some dissension in the ranks of the Chinese Communist Party. The leader at the time, the nominal leader anyway, the chairman of the Chinese Communist Party, was a man named Zhao Ziyang, and he was from Guangzhou in the south, which is near Hong Kong, and had always been a little more open to Western ideas, had mm-hmm. always been a little more open to the idea of reform, of having the Communist Party step back from its draconian totalitarian control of the population. He was ousted. The standing committee of the Politburo voted him out of office. He was put under house arrest for the rest of his life.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because he said, we don't need to use deadly force. Let's just talk to the students. Let's see if we can perhaps end some of the excessive corruption and bureaucracy. Let's move towards a more open society. And for that, he was put under house arrest for the rest of his life. He actually wrote a book later in life that was smuggled out of China, calling for a gradual move towards democracy. He said this will take some years, maybe decades, but the goal should be for the Chinese Communist Party to stop being a one-party dictatorship.
Right.
And, of course, the opposite view prevailed, and Deng Xiaoping came in and said, it's all right if we shed a little blood. We've got to put down this is a counter-revolution against communism. And so they did. They carried out their orders.
So, Stephen, just so our listeners are aware, the Tiananmen Square massacre wasn't just an isolated event that took place clear across the world. It doesn't have an impact on us and our understanding of democracy and governmental regime. In fact, what it demonstrated for us in terms of a pedagogical value is the sheer danger of a totalitarian regime.
The sheer danger of any government that is run by power-hungry maniacs who respect neither the laws of God nor the laws of man.
Right.
Absolutely. These are people who were intended to stay in power forever. And that's actually an adequate summation, in fact, condensation of what communism is all about. The fairy tale, of course, is that it's going to lead to a classless society where everyone is equal and
right,
everyone
right.
is producing as hard as they can and consuming only what they need. The reality is that it is a totalitarian system of control,
mm-hmm.
manipulated, used by a few Machiavellian leaders to concentrate all power and all wealth in their own hands. Make no mistake, the leaders of China today are all billionaires. They don't subsist on their $5,000, $6,000 a month salary. They are billionaires. Xi Jinping, the leader of China today, the Red Emperor of China, the Red Dictator, his family has overseas bank accounts in the Bahamas. They have become very wealthy. Everyone does. That's what the Communist Party is all about. It is a mechanism of exploitation of ordinary people in China under the guise of helping them.
Right. And that really is one of the driving forces of the communist ideology to begin with. You talk about Karl Marx. The fact of the matter is he understands that communism begins where atheism begins. The whole premise is of totalitarianism. Communism does not work if the world isn't conquered for communism.
That's right. And it doesn't work if anyone has any morals, if anyone has any ethics, if anyone has any compunctions about using deadly force to stay in power forever. Mao Zedong was fond of saying that he was Wufa Wutian, which means I'm without law and without God.
Yeah,
and he was. He was godless and lawless his entire life. And of course, the one leads to the other, doesn't it? If you don't have God in your life, if you don't listen to the still small voice, if you don't listen, don't turn to your heart and understand that the natural law is written on the human heart and you shouldn't lie and cheat and steal and do those things, then the sky's the limit. You get away with whatever you can. And Mao Zedong, of course, said as a young man also that he said there are other people and things in the world, he said, but they're only there for my use and my pleasure.
Right.
In other words, people were just an instrument for him to use to aggrandize his own power and wealth.
His tea girls, the whole cohort of those tea girls, was definitely one of those. I mentioned in the open the irony, the sheer irony of the fact that, and it's a travesty, really. I'm not saying this in humor, that this massacre took place in Tiananmen Square, and literally Tiananmen, the gate of the gate of heavenly peace, and hardly peaceful to begin with, but there was nothing heavenly about it either. This was the result of a nation that had cast out any notion of the divine, and therefore accountability, moral accountability to the divine.
It had, and it did that deliberately and consciously from the very beginning. Mao Zedong, of course, was absolutely opposed to any Christian, any Catholic presence in China. He called in the 1930s, as a younger man, he called Catholic missionaries. He said they were terrorists.
Yeah.
Later on, he said they're no better than Nazis, and they all deserve to be ejected, deported from the country.
Yeah. And we're going to continue this conversation with our guest, Stephen Mosher, first American social scientist to visit mainland China. And he has appeared numerous times before Congress as an expert in world population, China, and human rights abuses. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter for Cresta in the Afternoon.
It's time for Family Man with Dr. Gregory Popchak.
We'd all love to do more to serve others, but where do you find the time? Well, it's easy if you remember that Christian service begins at home. Remind your family that everything God's given you is meant to be passed on to other brothers and sisters in the Lord when you're done. Encourage your family to take good care of the clothes, toys, furniture, and other blessings you've been given so that others can delight in them when it's their turn. Then, once per season, as a family, gather the gently used clothes, toys, and other goods you've finished enjoying and bring them to your parish or other community center that can donate them to other families who are waiting to be blessed as you have been. To discover more ways your family can celebrate the liturgy of domestic church life, check out the newest editions of Parenting with Grace and visit CatholicCounselors.com. I'm Dr. Greg Popchak, but you can call me Family Man.
To discover more ways faith can enrich your life, visit CatholicCounselors.com.
What is conversion? The Catholic Catechism says there are two kinds of conversions. The first is baptism, which removes original sin and washes away all other sin. The second is the conversion of the heart from sin to the merciful love of God. It is Jesus who calls us to this conversion. The time is fulfilled, he said. The kingdom of God is at hand. Repent and believe in the gospel. A perfect example of this conversion is St. Peter, who, after denying his master three times, burst into tears of repentance. St. Ambrose describes the two conversions as the water and tears, the water of baptism and the tears of repentance. Jesus' call to conversion is not first and foremost to outward penance, such as sackcloth and ashes, but to an interior conversion of the heart, without which penances are sterile and futile. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
This is Father Ed Sovia. Why do we need to go to confession? It's because confession is that opportunity for the forgiveness of sins. All of us have to deal with sin, but confession is an opportunity for us to come to the forgiveness of sins as we acknowledge our sins and ask for God's mercy and help. May we always be a people who recognize that confession brings us to the heart of our loving God.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Cresta in the Afternoon is underwritten by the following nonprofit organization: Real Estate for Life. Buying or selling your home or business property? Real Estate for Life can connect you with one of 1,400 pro-life real estate agents around the world. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 70% to Ave Maria Radio and Human Life International. More information at realestateforlife.org or 877-LIFE-US1. That's realestateforlife.org.
This program brought to you in part by the town of Ave Maria, Florida.
Ave Maria, a big kind of small town. A golf cart friendly, ride your bike everywhere kind of town with something for everyone. Resort style amenities, two golf courses, shopping, and dining in our town center. With Ave Maria University and Ave Maria Catholic Church at the core of the community and a wide range of homes to meet your family's needs. Visitors are welcome. More information can be found at AveMaria.com. Ave Maria, a big kind of small town.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to Cresta in the Afternoon. I'm Marcus Peter. My guest, Stephen Moshe, the first American social scientist to visit mainland China, and he has appeared numerous times before Congress as an expert in world population, China, and human rights abuses. And he's the author of The Devil and Communist China from Mao Down to Z. So, Stephen, we were talking earlier about some of the problems with communism, and it's very important that we understand that sometime in 2019, someone published in America magazine, it was a very poorly written article about how Catholicism and communism were compatible. And factually, they're not. And Kengor wrote a really good response to it. But just so our listeners understand, for example, the sheer godlessness of the communist system, just shed some light on that.
Well, the great Archbishop Fulton Sheen and Chairman Mao Zedong, the communist leader of the Chinese Communist Party, the chairman for many decades, disagreed on everything.
Mm-hmm.
But they did agree on one fundamental point, and that was that communism is an ideology, it's a political system based on hate. So as such, it is diametrically opposed to Catholicism, which is based on love. What Archbishop Fulton Sheen wrote as a very young priest, in fact, I think the book dates from 1930, he said, for the first time in the history of the planet, we have a political philosophy based on hatred, hatred of God and hatred of one's fellow man. And he went on to elaborate that hatred was expressed in communism and how diametrically opposed that was to Christianity, which is based on love, love of God and love of neighbor. We are to love our neighbor as ourselves. We're to love God and to love our neighbors. And Mao actually agreed with him. Mao wrote at one point, he said, communism is not love. Communism is a hammer that we use to destroy the enemy.
Mm-hmm.
And think about that for a second. Communism is based on hate. It is a hammer that we use to destroy the enemy. As such, it rejects God. It rejects neighbor. It seeks to divide society into the masses and the counter-revolutionaries. And there always has to be a target for that hatred. That hatred has to be to be constantly fed. It has to fester in the hearts and minds of the Chinese people for a couple of reasons. One is to distract the Chinese people from the suffering that they've endured under communism, right? Mm-hmm. There has to be an internal enemy always. And the internal enemy in the 50s were the rightists, the so-called counter-revolutionaries, the capitalists, the landlords, the nationalists. Then in the Cultural Revolution, they were everyone with an education, everyone with foreign relatives, everyone with foreign ties, anyone with high school teachers, college teachers. And then, of course, with the beginning of the one-child policy, the enemy of the state became the unborn. Mm-hmm. You see, the system always has to have an enemy because it feeds on that hatred. Yep. That's the fuel that drives it forward. And so from 1980 to 2016, the one-child policy was basically targeted at the unborn and newborn children who were declared to be the enemy of the state. That was the target of the communist hate machine. And I liken it in the book, you know, The Devil in Communist China, to the Phoenicians and the Canaanites' ancient worship of Baal, where they sacrificed their children to the god of Baal. They burned them up in the furnace in the god's belly that was constantly lit. And that's the way they placated the god. Well, in the false god, in communism, the way they placated the false god was to continually sacrifice victims. And over the 36 years of the one-child policy, those sacrificial victims were also the unborn.
Right.
The killing spree that the Communist Party went on over the course of its 75 years of misrule of China is unimaginable. Mm-hmm. 100 million in various persecutions, pogroms, and famines, and then 400 million more unborn children, newborn children sacrificed to the false god of communism, again, because the machine feeds on hate. That's its fuel. Without that hate, the muscular tone of the system couldn't be preserved. Without that hate, the leaders would never know whether their secret police would follow instructions, would actually carry out orders to kill.
Mm-hmm. And as you know better than most people, communism, Marxism takes the Hegelian conflict dynamic and takes it to an extreme. And for Marx, it was the bourgeois and the proletariat. And in China, it was really a faithful application of Marxist principles. There are some that might be that might attempt to make the argument that, well, really, China, we're seeing an extreme example of communism and socialism. But in reality, this is what communism looks like at its face if it is enacted in a society. And we've seen that, as you listed in your book, in multiple regimes across the world where communism has set foot.
Well, absolutely. And of course, at Panama, the children were told that Russia will spread its errors to many countries.
Mm-hmm.
Its most successful transplantation of communism came in China, where because of support that Joseph Stalin sent to Mao Zedong and the Red Army, they were able to prevail in the Chinese Civil War. But then China, in turn, has spread this evil to neighboring countries, to North Korea, for example, to Vietnam, to Cambodia, and now in Laos and some other places in the world, they're endeavoring to spread it as well. So the evil continues to spread. And again, the communism is a fantasy, is a fallacy that is fed to naive people to lead them to think that they can create, that heaven can be created on earth.
Right.
And we know that's an impossibility. But that must be a kind of, the ancient temptation of the devil in the garden to Adam and Eve was, you know, if you eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, you shall be as God.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the temptation of communism is that if you follow the communist ideology, we will all achieve a perfect society where everyone is equal. And the result, of course, is always the opposite. It breeds not love but hatred. It breeds not unity but division. It breeds not life but death.
Right. How much influence do you think Qin Shi Huang's decision to eradicate all classical philosophical literature from the nation had on paving the way for communism to set root in China?
Well, here's an interesting little historical footnote. And that is that over 2,000 years ago, before the birth of Christ, in China, there was a war of all against all. It lasted for 500 years. That's half a millennium. Now, we had a 100-year war in Europe. Mm-hmm. This was five times longer. And in the beginning, there were hundreds of feudal states. And by the end of that war, there was only one state left standing. And that was the state, the Qin state, from which we get the word China. Mm-hmm. That was the state that became the most totalitarian. The Qin state, led by the first emperor of the Qin dynasty, Qin Shi Huangdi, was a kind of proto-totalitarian state. It had a standing army. It controlled agricultural production. It controlled the production of iron, from which you could make weapons. So no one else could make iron because they might make weapons, and weapons had to be controlled by the state. They had the song and dance troops going around the country, singing the praises of the emperor, saying that he was a god.
Mm-hmm.
They had concentration camps. The concentration camp inmates built the first Great Wall and the Great Canals of China. They had political commissars in the military to make sure the generals didn't become too ambitious and try to overthrow the emperor.
Right.
So almost all of what we associate with modern Marxist-Leninism was actually invented in China over 2,000 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And Mao Zedong, when he was a young man around 1920, he had a choice to make. He had chosen the Western model of democracy, which is what the Nationalist Party leaders Sun Yat-sen did. But he wasn't drawn to that because democracy, spreads out power.
Yep.
The separation of powers and so forth, respect for the individual rights of people, that dissolves and dilutes the power of the central government. He wasn't drawn to that. He wanted to be the new Qin Shi Huangdi.
That's right.
He wanted to be the new emperor of China. And so he seized upon communism because it reminded him in so many ways of the ancient totalitarian system known as legalism, mm-hmm. under which China had been unified over 2,200 years ago. And one of the things that first evil emperor did 2,200 years ago was he burned all the books of competing scholars, all the books of Confucius and Mencius and the other scholars went up in flames. And in fact, the scholars themselves were killed. There was only one acceptable ideology allowed in China 2,200 years ago, just as there's only one acceptable ideology allowed in China today. So, yeah, there are strong historical, resonances down through the ages that we find in China.
Right. So going back then to why this has pertinence for us, we have to understand that any form of a totalitarian dictatorial regime that seeks absolute power is also seeking to usurp the moral authority of God over the conscience of the individual and the nation.
Well, it has to, necessarily,
mm-hmm.
because not only the leaders of the Chinese Communist Party, but the members of the Chinese Communist Party, and indeed the ordinary population, are all told that there is only a single source of all authority, and that is the Chinese Communist Party and its leaders. That's very, very clearly written out in the documents that have been published over the last 10 years under the new Red Emperor Xi Jinping.
Mm-hmm.
And if you say that, then you necessarily reject God and the laws of God. You posit an earthly authority replacing the true divine authority, which is found in heaven. So communism and Catholicism are absolutely incompatible. And communism and Catholicism, of course, is true, and communism is just a fraud. We're going to create a perfect society on earth, and if you fall for that, we control you forever.
Right. It, even as you're talking, and I think all of us are probably making this connection subconsciously, but we're reminded of that vapid John Lennon song, Imagine. It's singing about the potential of a communist socialist utopia, when in reality, every place that communism has been attempted has resulted in not only the massacre of innumerable lives, but also the inevitable conclusion of poverty. Now, we'll continue this conversation with Stephen Mosher, the first American social scientist to visit mainland China. He has also appeared numerous times before Congress as an expert in world population, China, and human rights abuse, and he's the author of The Devil in Communist China from Mao Down to Z. Stay tuned, I'm Marcus Peter for Cresta in the afternoon.
Ave Maria School of Law is the Roman Catholic law school in the United States. Consistently ranked in the Princeton Review as one of the best and most conservative law schools, as well as pre-law's most devout law school. Ave Maria School of Law provides a traditional legal education while emphasizing how the law intersects with the Catholic intellectual tradition and natural law philosophy. Ave Maria School of Law, unabashedly Catholic, consistently excellent. For more information, visit avemarialaw.edu.
St. Therese once told her sister Celine that when we trust ourselves and not God, our soul becomes barren and incapable of virtue. Her remedy? External works of charity. We all try to do it on our own sometimes without asking for God's help. At St. Paul Evangelization, we suggest sharing the gospel with someone who needs it. Check out streetevangelization.com to find a team near you where you can share the love of Jesus. If there isn't one in your area yet, perhaps God is calling you to start a team in your city. To learn more, visit streetevangelization.com.
Support for this Ave Maria radio program comes in part by the non-for-profit St. Anthony Services. Are you shopping for mortgage products, Catholic investing, Catholic health, real estate, or estate planning? StAnthonyServices.org can help you find a Catholic professional for these needs. They regularly connect faithful citizens with faith-based professionals that share our Christian values. More information at StAnthonyServices.org or 877-LIFE-US1.
Cresta in the Afternoon is underwritten by the following nonprofit organization: Real Estate for Life. Buying or selling your home or business property? Real Estate for Life can connect you with one of 1,400 pro-life real estate agents around the world. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 70% to Ave Maria Radio and Human Life International. More information at realestateforlife.org or 877-LIFE-US1. That's realestateforlife.org.
Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo.
A conversation I had several years ago with one of our listeners who wrote to me and said she was being challenged by a friend or a cousin or someone regarding the church and various teachings, especially on marriage and abortion and whatnot. And she said, I need the answers and I need them quickly because I want to quiet this person and shut them down. And I wrote her back and I said, I'm not going to give you the answers. I will give you some resources, such as the link to the Catechism of the Catholic Church. And I said, but you need to look these up and you need to read them over and you need to learn them, because this is not going to be the last time that you're going to be challenged or questioned about your faith. And what good is it if you're just barking answers to someone and you're not able to explain them charitably? This is a way we all should learn, by doing the work ourselves.
Catholic Connections, Teresa Tomeo. Weekdays, 9 a.m. Eastern. On EWTN Radio.
Dr. Ray Guarendi.
What's looking back at you at age 22? What do you hope to say about that child at age 22? If you're content to say, well, the way kids are turning out nowadays, counting my blessings. Parole officer says one of the nicest children he has. Or would you rather say he's 1 in 100? Morals, compassion, seeks God. Are you prepared to be a 1 in 100 parent then? You can't parent like the bulk of parents anymore. You will supervise far higher. You will screen out toxic media sewage at a rate unlike all of your friends, perhaps your family. No guarantees as to what will be looking back at you at age 22. But you want to be able to say, I think he's 1 in 100. Then you be a 1 in 100 parent.
Good afternoon and welcome back to Cresta in the Afternoon. I'm Marcus Peter. My guest, Stephen Mosher, author of The Devil and Communist China, the first American social scientist to visit mainland China. So, Stephen, we were talking earlier about how lending oneself or one's nation to a communist ideology inevitably leads to a profound sense of godlessness in the governing of the nation.
One of the things that we have seen is that for every nation that has adopted a communist regime, especially here in China, China that we're talking about, we've also seen that each of their leaders take on an almost self-divinized role. They see themselves as a kind of reincarnation of a god, so to speak, because of the totalitarian, absolute way in which they view administrative, they wield administrative power.
Well, they do, and this sort of divinization, which is almost the same thing in this case, always is used as a means of controlling the population. You mm-hmm. see, because if the leader is supposedly a god, you don't want to disobey.
That's right.
God, quote unquote, commandments. Certainly, Mao took great advantage of the fact that the people of China had always historically regarded the emperor as a semi-divine mm-hmm. figure and put himself in the same place. And this is true in a larger sense as well, Marcus, because the communism is a quasi-religious cult in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Church of Communism in China, the leader of the Communist Party is the head of that church. The Communist Party members, and there are 94 million members of the Chinese Communist Party, are the acolytes in that church.
Mm-hmm.
And the pew sitters, who are supposed to be docile and sheep-like and follow all the instructions of the supreme leader, are the people of China. So that's why China, under communism, has been so hostile to other religions,
right,
principally Catholicism, mm-hmm. but also Christianity and even other traditional religions. Buddhism and Taoism have all been suppressed in China. Why? Because communism itself is a quasi-religious cult, and the leader of the Communist Party also always claims semi-divine status.
Right. In fact, in communism's everywhere that communism has set its roots down, you always see the abolition of private property, which are fundamental tenets of communism, the abolition of the family, abolition of national identity. All of this stands, first of all, in stark juxtaposition to the Catholic teaching of the right to private property ownership, the primacy of the family over the collective society, that the nuclear family becomes the foundation of the society, and most of all, the dignity of the human person. So in its effort to be anti-religious, especially to Judeo-Christianity, it is, in fact, its own religious cult.
It is. And you know, I spend a few chapters talking about the leader of that cult, Mao Zedong,
mm-hmm.
who, of course, headed that cult from when he took power in the Chinese Communist Party in 1936 until his death 40 years later. He ruled China for longer than Lenin and Stalin combined in Russia, and he did much more damage. I mean, we have, a few tens of millions, sounds like I'm minimizing the death toll in the Soviet Union, or horrific. But China, under Mao Zedong and later on, eclipsed that record by a factor of 10 or
mm-hmm.
more. So I call the Chinese Communist Party the biggest killing machine in human history, but all of the communist parties are killing machines. That's one of the reasons why they exist, to constantly declare enemies, counter-revolutionaries, to be eliminated, to maintain the muscular rigor of the system.
Right.
But Chairman Mao, it's very interesting to look at the leaders of these communist parties, because they're all megalomaniacs. The
mm-hmm.
people who rise to the top of the factional infighting in a communist party, where it's a war of all against all for total power, are not good men. Mao, at every point in his life, chose evil over good.
Mm-hmm.
And he was proud of, in reviewing his life, as I did in some detail in The Devil in Communist China, whenever he faced a choice between doing good to achieve an end or political end, or doing evil to achieve an end, he would always do evil. He would always lie and deceive. Why? Because he could not only achieve his end, dominating the party or dominating the population, he could also count himself clever in the process.
Right.
So if he wasn't possessed by the devil, and I have no proof that he was, he might as well have been, because at every turn in his life, he made not the the good decision, but the diabolical decision.
Right. And one of the ways in which we saw this very clearly was his military strategy of Tse Tao Sa, and you can talk about that a little more. You talk about it extensively in the book.
Well, the Chinese phrase that you just said very accurately is to kill with a borrowed sword.
Right.
Jie Dao Sha Ren. So Mao was very, very good at working behind the scenes, manipulating people, getting people to do his bidding, including killing others without getting directly involved. One example of that came during the Chinese Civil War, when people may remember the Long March, when Chiang Kai-shek's nationalist forces forced Chairman Mao and the Red Army out of their South China redoubt and forced them on a long march, 6,000 kilometers, a couple thousand miles up to the north of China, where they could be resupplied and refunded by Stalin and the Russian communists. But on the way, he met a very powerful Red Army led by a gentleman named Zhang Guotao. And Zhang Guotao was a charismatic leader. He had many, many more troops than Mao, and Mao regarded him as a threat.
Mm-hmm.
And so what Mao suggested was, you take this route, I'll take this other route. And as soon as they separated forces, Zhang Guotao's forces were attacked by the nationalists. I believe, and a lot of historians believe, that Mao deliberately revealed the position of his political enemy, the other Red Army faction, to the Nationalist Party, allowing the Nationalists to destroy his political enemy. Killing with a borrowed knife, we call it.
Yeah.
The best example of that, though, came during the Korean War. You know that the Chinese People's Liberation Army engaged in human wave attacks during the Korean War. Massive numbers of Chinese troops poured across the Yellow River into North China, into North Korea, rather, and fell upon the American troops. Those troops, those People's Liberation Army troops, a year or two before, had been Nationalist Army troops that had surrendered. Mao Zedong didn't trust them.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted them eliminated. But instead of eliminating them himself, he killed with a borrowed sword. He used the American forces in Korea to kill off his domestic political enemies.
Right.
Again, killing with a borrowed sword. He was a master of deceit and deception. He reveled in deception. He was, if the devil is the father of lies, he was a faithful son of the father of lies.
You know, hearing all this in relatively safe America, I understand we have our political issues here, and truthfully, moral issues as well in our political leaders, whether or not we can trust that they're always telling us the truth. But it pales in comparison to this evil that has happened, and in some ways is still happening, clear across the world. And because we're so divorced from it, we sometimes don't understand how those actions of those people across the world, however evil they might be, impact even the way we live our democracy here.
Well, they do. We started this conversation by talking about the Tiananmen massacre, which was kind of the high watermark of the democracy movement in China, which has been under constant threat and pressure ever since.
Mm-hmm.
But in the years since, you know, we have enabled the rise of the country that wants to destroy us. China, under the Chinese Communist Party, and now has the second largest economy. The military, which rivals our own, especially in the Asian Pacific. And it is very active in the United States. Setting up Confucius Institutes on our college campuses to teach communist ideology, to teach a false version of Chinese history, which doesn't mention the Tiananmen massacre, mention Taiwan, doesn't mention Tibet, doesn't mention the various purges and deaths caused by communism. They have owned, they set up radio stations here. They own newspapers here. They're engaged in a massive effort to transform the United States into China's image. And that's something I worry about every day, because we're an open society.
Mm-hmm.
And so we find it difficult to defend ourselves against these sort of what the Chinese Communist Party calls united front attacks and propaganda that is constantly being deployed in the United States and around the world. We had hoped in the 1980s that China was going to become more like us. The threat now is that we might become more like China. And quite frankly, that's what keeps me up at night.
Right. I hear you. We do have some hope, however. You think about a lot of the great heritages that have flowed from Western civilization and Christendom. You think about the Magna Carta and how that influenced the entire British Empire. You think about the Declaration of Independence and our American Constitution. No such documents that flow from the intellectual heritage have come forth from any form of communism, let alone Chinese communism. Instead, the adverse is true. So we do have objective Judeo-Christian principles to appeal to, and that's the hope, that's the assurance that we have here in Western democracy.
It is, and people need to be more aware of the great Judeo-Christian heritage that we've received over the last 2,000 years, the great universities, the public welfare systems, the acts of charity that Catholics have engaged in, all course of history, but I would say this: you know, we had 2,000 years ago a great commission given to us, and we were told to go and make disciples of all the world and baptize them. And I must say that we Catholics have not really succeeded in our mission. Perhaps if we had been more evangelistic, perhaps if we had had more people filled with more missionary zeal, the whole world now would be converted, and we wouldn't be facing what, in my view, is a diabolical plot, which is one description of communism, that intends to subvert not only our Judeo-Christian civilization, but to lead us to a lasting tyranny that may usher in a new dark age. And unfortunately, you know, the achievements of Judeo-Christian our Judeo-Christian faith are not taught in our colleges and universities. I went to Stanford University, and I will tell you, we had professors there who greatly admired communist China, Red China. They thought that China was creating a new socialist man, a new socialist woman, a totally egalitarian society. They didn't know anything about China, but they romanticized it nonetheless. John Gurley, the economist, who thought that state planning was the solution to all of our ills and to poverty. Professor Harris, who is the father of our current vice president, Kamala Harris, was another communist economist at Stanford who greatly admired communism. I went to China thinking that the Communist Party had achieved great things in lifting up the Chinese people out of poverty. And it took my Chinese friends in China several months to convince me that it wasn't so, that life had been better in many respects before the communists came to China than afterwards.
That's right. And I'd love to continue this conversation, especially about how Christianity did have an opportunity in the epoch of pre-communist China in planting the seeds of the gospel. But that would be a conversation for another time. Thank you for joining us, Stephen. My guest, Stephen Mosher, first American social scientist to visit mainland China and the author of The Devil and Communist China, From Mao Down to Xi. And we're talking about this because today we celebrate the 35th anniversary of the Tiananmen Square Massacre. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter for Cresta in the Afternoon.
60 on 10 with Monsignor Charles Pope.
The first commandment: I am the Lord your God. You shall have no strange gods before me. In this commandment, God seeks to protect us from false claims to our worship and obedience. And there's a great sad history of people who have trusted in gods other than him or things other than him, and the ruin that it has caused. So God is trying to protect us and call us to an absolute trust and obedience of him. He asks us to trust him above all things and above all other people or so-called gods. We have to also avoid things like consulting horoscopes, palm reading, clairvoyance, recourse to mediums, any desire to try to control things apart from God. God simply says, trust me, I'm the Lord your God. The first commandment, I am the Lord your God. You shall have no strange gods before me.
For more about the Ten Commandments, visit EWTNRC.com.
Christ is the answer with Father John Ricardo.
We just did our parish mission a couple weeks ago now, and I suggested that in the course of the mission that we do something like a little mini spiritual assessment of our lives. I don't have to show this to anybody, but a great chance for us just to, with real honesty, just between us and Jesus, ask ourselves some questions. First question, given the fact that half of Catholics don't think God is even personal, would be to ask ourselves that. Do I think God is personal? And then to ask myself, do I think a relationship with Jesus is possible? Do I have a relationship with Jesus? And if so, what's it look like? And then perhaps a little bit more awkwardly or painfully, to ask Jesus, from his perspective, what's the friendship that we have with him look like? How would he describe our friendship with him? That might be a hard conversation to have.
Afternoon, and welcome back to Cresta in the Afternoon. I'm Marcus Peter, rounding off this hour today's program. 35 years ago, the Tiananmen Square protests demonstrated a deadly crackdown on any attempt at democracy in mainland China. To this day, China actually no longer has freedom of assembly. And to this day, the Chinese government has not issued an apology to the people of China and the world for its travesty of this great massacre. You and I have so much to be thankful for here in the United States of America. We have the great heritage of Judeo-Christian tradition founded in all that the Catholic Church did for the world that we now call Western civilization. And because of that, our rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness on earth and eternal happiness are enshrined in our governmental constitution, which simply means that we are free to profess our faith. I'm Marcus Peter.
Cresta in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio, and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. To follow up on any of the guests or information presented on today's program, visit the Cresta Guest Archive at AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMaria Radio.net. To listen to this or any other edition of Cresta in the Afternoon, visit the audio archives at AveMariaRadio.net. Or to order a CD of the program, call 734-930-4506 or email orders at AveMariaRadio.net. That's 734-930-4506 or orders at AveMariaRadio.net.